How can you achieve and maintain business growth? Harvard Business School Executive Education is now accepting applications for a new program, Driving Profitable Growth. Taking place in Boston from October 25th through the 28th, this program focuses on business expansion and organizational growth strategies that can lead your company into the future. Learn more about this three-day program for senior leaders by visiting hbs.me/growth. That's hbs.me/growth.
You are Locked On Thunder, your daily podcast on the Oklahoma City Thunder, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello there, everyone. We're locked in for episode 175 of Locked On Thunder, presented by the Norman Transcript. I'm your host, Fred Katz. Locked On Thunder is part of the Locked On Podcast Network. You can head out to iTunes, subscribe to the podcast there, and leave a review once you're on that page. Find us on audioboom.com also, and log on to normantranscript.com. Check out my blog, Thunder Road. It's under the sports tab on the site. You can see all my Thunder coverage there. I'm on every day of the week, Monday through Friday. Last show before the weekend today is going up Friday morning. Thunder played the Spurs on Friday night at home, coming off that two-game winning streak where I don't know, even can't even put to words what Russell Westbrook did on that winning streak. I got Andrew Schleck from Down to Dunk on the line. Third time guest, right?
Three times more than Jerry Ramsey.
Jerry Ramsey's been on zero times.
Yeah, three times more, right?
Well, three times more, yeah. More times.
Yeah.
Three more times than Jerry
Ramsey.
Take
that, Jerry.
Yeah, three more times than Jerry Ramsey. Yeah, there we go. Jerry, I just want every single time I have someone on, they should just have to say the tally of times they've been on more than Jerry.
I'm keeping it.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
That's what we should do. I should get like an intern that can just keep track of all the times everyone has been on.
The Locked On intern. They should do it for the whole network.
Yes, they should have to say that for every single Locked On. Even people in like Locked On, you know, Locked On Bulls should have to. No one in Chicago knows.
Locked On Patriots should do it. This is the 10,000th podcast that Jerry Ramsey has not been on a part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Locked On Patriots. That would be great. It would be the only thing I would like about the Patriots as a Jets fan. Be the only thing that would make me happy. We watched the Thunder in different ways.
Yes.
Because one of the things that I like about Down to Dunk, and you know I listen a lot, is you are very clearly and obviously a fan, and you let it be known that you're a fan.
Yes.
But you're very good at like putting the fandom aside when it comes to like me having rational analysis.
Yeah.
You're also good at like bringing in the fandom when it makes you relatable. And so, no, I mean that in a real way. And so I want to know, not like non-bias analysis Andrew, I want to know like Thunder fan Andrew, Wednesday night and Monday night, like how many times did you have to change your underwear?
Oh, man. It was ridiculous. So Thunder games are kind of a tough time for me. I have two children, so I'm either watching it like on the TV, and if it's on the TV, I have like it on my phone when I'm like trying to get my kids to bed. And it really just, it makes me either like a really good or really bad dad, depending on how well the Thunder are doing. So like if my kid, the Thunder are winning, I'm like, yeah, kids, let's go to bed, brush your teeth. If they're doing awful, I can be a meaner dad. So I've been like a mean dad the past couple Thunder games, because they've just been miserable. It was just an absolutely miserable experience watching the first three and most of the fourth quarters. They played so bad. Like, I was mad at the way that Russell was playing, really, most of that time. I was mad at the rotations. There was one lineup, and it was Russell, Victor, and Samaj on the court at the same time. I'm like, what is that? Like, why in the world would you use that lineup? How would that be helpful in any situation ever? I don't know. It was a miserable experience up until the end. And then you just see Russell doing what he's doing. I mean, at the end of the Magic game, you're like, okay, like this is coming. Like, I just know this is coming. Even in the Mavericks game, you could just feel the shift happen. And part of the shift that was happening was Jeremy Grant coming in the game. And it's just weird because the past, even ever since Houston, I feel like they want to make a run, and so they put in this lineup that includes Jeremy Grant at the four, and he's done it the last three games. And I'm just like, why don't we try that in the second quarter? Like, why are we trying weird stuff up until then? But just watching Russell do what he does has been just spectacular. And also not surprising, but also surprising in the same way. I don't know. He's spectacular.
The Jeremy Grant at the four stuff is real interesting. It is. I think the most interesting part, like, Jeremy Grant played exactly 0 seconds in the first half on Wednesday.
Right.
And then played 19 minutes after halftime. And, like, it's not because somebody got hurt. And, like, it's not even, like, I don't even know if Billy, like, saw something and was like, okay, let's do this and stick with it. Because that's not the first time that he's done that. Billy's always been a guy whose rotations have, he adjusts from game to game. He just always does that. He plays to the tendencies of his opponents. He's always going to do that. I think it can be both his absolute best trait as a coach. I say this a lot. Like, I think it can be his best trait as a coach. Like, that's the trait that helped him find the small ball lineup against the Warriors in games 3 and 4 of the Western Conference Finals last year, mm-hmm. which I don't think a lot of coaches in the NBA would have been able to find. Like, I just don't think that a lot of guys would have had that thought process that allowed them to discover that lineup, which was, you know, it gave him a chance to win the series. It put him up 3-1. Like, that was the primary reason. It just destroyed the death lineup, that lineup. And at the same time, I think it can sometimes be a negative for him with just the inconsistency and just kind of the weirdness of, like, no Jeremy Grant in the first half and 19 minutes in the second half, or, you know, Taj Gibson for, you know, 6 minutes in the first quarter and then not playing at all for the rest of the half. And then, you know, he closes the game at the five. And it's like, it's interesting. It's interesting with the way that he's going about it. And it makes it really difficult. I don't know if this is a good thing or a bad thing, because it could be a good thing because it makes him unpredictable in the playoffs. It could be a bad thing because maybe the players don't know quite what's going to happen. But it makes it really difficult to figure out I don't know what their postseason rotation is going to be. Like, I really have no idea.
Yeah, and he did this last season. I mean, all season. He's playing these screwy lineups, and you're just like, oh, like, what is he doing? And then the playoffs start, and the team was different. I mean, the team in general was different, the way that they played. And I think, like, the Kevin Durant Thunder definitely had a switch that they would turn when the playoffs came on. But I wonder if there's going to be a similar, like, coaching switch that's going to be flipped where it's like, okay, no more messing around. I know this works. We're going to do this. And I wonder that about Steven Adams, because Steven Adams is not hurt. Steven Adams seems to be physically fine. But there are just games where you're just like, what happened to him? Like, what's going on with him? I wonder if he is maybe saving himself for the playoffs. I don't know. I don't know what else it would be with him, but I just wonder if there's going to be this flip switch where it's going to be like, okay, Jeremy Grant, you're coming in the second quarter at the four, because we know that works, and we're going to stop playing Samaj, we're going to stop playing Sabonis. I don't know. I just wonder if he's got that and he's kind of waiting for that and doesn't want to show his hand.
Yeah. Yeah, that's definitely interesting. I wonder also, I mean, the postseason stuff, like, we should do is we have to give Billy some amount of we have to explain his process at least. We shouldn't sit here making it seem like it's just nonsensical, you know, throwing stuff at the wall and sure. and seeing what sticks. Like, there is a reason to his madness. Like, Billy, logic to his madness, what's the expression? Method to his madness. There we go. Sorry, I like just learned English. Sorry. But there is a method to his madness, and it's that Billy really strongly believes in playing to the weakness of the opponent and adjusting to the weakness of the opponent, and is really flexible is the wrong word. Like, it's almost like he is principally against stubbornness. Like, yeah. You know, it's almost like that. It's almost a stance against stubbornness as much as it is a stance for flexibility. He really believes in working that. And it's really, it's just an overall philosophy of his. I think it's a really important one. I think it's one of the most important ones to his identity as a coach, honestly. And it's something he really believes. And it is interesting because there aren't that many coaches who are quite as untied to rotations as he is. Because other than Russell Westbrook, who has been in the exact same substitution pattern pretty much all year, almost without change, maybe a couple games he's played the third quarter or the whole first quarter or whatever. But for the most part, it's, you know, out at the 2-3 minute mark in the odd quarters and in at the 8-9 minute mark in the even quarters. And that's pretty much it for the entire year. And other than that, like, everyone's been on a different rotation for pretty much the whole season. Maybe he thinks it helps too. Like he says, he thinks that putting a guy in as many different positions as you possibly can during the regular season, even if they're uncomfortable in the moment, it can help you in the long run. And maybe he's right. Like, maybe those guys, even though, like, in the Warrior series with that small lineup or in the big lineup at the Spurs series, like, even though those lineups weren't lineups he played a lot during the regular season, maybe those guys were able to thrive because they had been in so many different lineups and they didn't feel uncomfortable because they'd been in uncomfortable situations that Billy put them in during the regular season before. Like, I'm willing to believe that. I know he believes that.
Yeah. And, I mean, you run lineup data on the Thunder, on the NBA.com, and, like, you can hardly find any lineups that have played any minutes together. And it's, like, there's lineups, like, there was this lineup that was Westbrook, Roberson, Abrinas, Cantor, and Adams. And it's, like, one of the best lineups in the league. I think it was, like, net rating had, like, the second or third best net rating in the NBA as far as lineups went. And they played, like, 170 minutes together or something like that. And it was incredible. I'm like, oh, I wish we could see that a little bit more. But then you look at the Thunder's lineup data, and you're like, oh, my goodness. It's just like a mile long. He's played so many combinations. And I think I don't know how many combinations he played against the Magic, but it felt like a million. Because a lot of times you feel like you can hardly keep up, especially like with Samaj and Oladipo, especially on TV, because it's hard to tell them apart sometimes on TV. But yeah, the lineups are very interesting, and I wonder like what the human dynamic to those are too. Like, there's the basketball dynamic and there's the human dynamic. Like, I wonder how much of that plays into playing some of these guys and like giving guys like as you know many chances as possible, even if they're not doing well. Like, how much that has to do with the human dynamic. I feel like that's something that's forgotten a lot when we talk about the NBA. That these are just like 2K players that we're just plugging in, but these are actually like human beings and. You know, that need to be nurtured in some way. I mean, these younger guys for sure, and the Thunder are a very young team. So I wonder how much that plays into some of the stuff that he does.
Oh, I think it's definitely part of it. Like, I think he's really hyper aware of that. I think it's definitely part of it. I think that's part of, like, the keeping guys ready, though. If you sit a guy for 3 months straight and then you have to use him later down the line, like, that's not keeping him ready. And that's, like... Mm-hmm. Part of what I mean when I paraphrase him by saying that he wants to keep guys ready. He wants to make it so when if he has to use a guy, he doesn't want to make it so he hasn't played a game in 2 months. He wants to keep that. You know, he put in Norris Cole yesterday. Mm-hmm. Like, he just wants to – it was only for 4 minutes, but he put him in over Samaje. He played him with Samaje for like 45 seconds.
He did. And, I was infuriated, but he did it.
I actually thought of you when he put in Samaje, and I was like, oh, I guess Samaje is coming in for Norris Cole now. And then he went in for Vic. Now it's like somewhere the Schleck family is having to buy a new TV.
That's right. It was not a good moment. Yeah. I just could not believe it. I just feel like it's to like spite me somehow. It's like, what have I done to you, Billy? Like, why are you doing this? I just feel like this is all just a ploy for Russ to win the MVP. Like, why else would you play that lineup? Let's dig. We're not down far enough, guys. Now we got to give Russell enough room to make this spectacular.
You know, I understand why he plays Samaje. I actually please. Do understand okay. why he plays
Samaje. Tell me, please. I need to know.
So he likes... Well, let me finish my statement, and then I'll tell you. Okay. Before you get all snarky on me. Okay. I understand why he plays Samaje. The part that I question is the times where Samaje plays and doesn't guard the ball.
Yeah.
Because he plays Samaje because he likes his on-ball defense.
Mm-hmm.
Which I understand, because I actually think he's a pretty good on-ball defender. He fights really hard on the ball. He gets around screens pretty well. He plays incredibly hard on defense. He's got long arms, and he can disrupt passing lanes like from guarding the ball. And like I think he's definitely an above average on-ball defender. He's good, but he has a tendency of off the ball. Like, he gets backdoored a lot off the ball. Mm-hmm. And he'll, maybe run to screens, he'll get lost. He's a very different quality defender off the ball than he is on the ball. And when he plays those lineups with him at the two, and Russell still guards the point guards, or those are the times where I'm like, I don't quite get. I also think it's a thing where, like, if you have, and I think this is something where you talk about the human element too. If you have three point guards and you're not playing two of them, that's kind of sending a signal to both of them at the same time, where it's like, all right, you were both to a degree where I couldn't trust either of you. And that sends a signal to both of them at the same time. Whereas if you're playing one of them, you're at least doing it in a conventional way to where, like, one can jump another. It's like a conventional fashion. But if you're playing neither, and they're both thinking, man, I couldn't even make it to the second point guard, and the second point guard isn't even capable of playing right now. So it kind of doubles down on that, and I think it just pushes them both into a corner, especially with Samaje as like this quiet guy, and he's a rookie. I think it's that whole keeping him ready thing. Like, during the regular season, 12 minutes from Samaje Christen with a bench unit, he's playing next to Victor Oladipo. I don't think it's like the worst thing in the world. I'm not talking about the times where he plays next to Russ and he's guarding off the ball and that kind of stuff. But 12 minutes in a backup role, 13 minutes in a backup role, like, he's not the best backup point guard in the world. But if he's there, like, play him in the regular season. It's different if it's happening in the postseason, you know?
Yeah, I just think he's terrible. I just don't. I think that if the message was sent to both he and Norskoll that they can't play, I think that's the right message. I think that they need to play Victor Oladipo more. I hope they don't play him in the playoffs. I think they will. I think that Samaje will probably play in the playoffs, but I think this team would be better if the second unit was Oladipo surrounded by shooters, and then with Grant and Cantor. I mean, I think that all those guys can shoot. I mean, that lineup really isn't stopping anybody anyways, so why not give Abrines more minutes? Why not give McDermott more minutes and just see if they can keep the team afloat by scoring? I don't think Samaje is out there and it's going to make your defense great. The numbers say that he's not a good defender. I know he is a good on the ball defender because I think he tries really hard, but I just don't see it. I haven't seen it from all season, but, I think there's probably point guards out there that they could pick up that probably do a better job, but that's where I'm at. I probably won't change my stance on Samaje unless he just blows me away in some game, but. I don't know. I think the team would be better served in the long run as well if they'd let Victor Oladipo run some pick and roll. Because, I mean, his assist numbers are down drastically. And he has the ability to do it. He just hasn't been given the opportunity. And I think that in the playoffs, I think that they're doing themselves a disservice not giving themselves the opportunity to have a secondary playmaker. Because they really just don't have one. And Vic can be that. So that's kind of my frustration with it as well, is that Vic could have a little bit larger role than he has.
I do want to get back to that in 1 second, but first I just want to take a second to talk about SeatGeek. Buying tickets online for sports and concerts has been a confusing process for a long time. It's always been hard to find the best deal for that game or show you want to go to, and none of those older ticket sites want to change that, but SeatGeek is different. They've come along and created an amazing app and website that makes it easier than ever for fans to buy and sell tickets. SeatGeek is always the first place I go to look for tickets to a game or concert. I have the SeatGeek app on my phone, and I just used it the other day to look at tickets for the OKC Dodgers with baseball season right around the corner. Everything about SeatGeek is designed to make life easier for sports and music fans. SeatGeek does all the price comparison for you by searching multiple ticket sites and ensuring that you get the best possible deal. SeatGeek does all the work, and you save the time and money. And SeatGeek wants to help you get the most bang for your buck. That's why every ticket on SeatGeek is given a grade based on value. You'll immediately see any underpriced seats and be able to find the best deals that fit your budget. Best of all, my listeners get a $20 rebate off their first SeatGeek purchase. To get your $20 rebate on tickets, download the SeatGeek app, go to the settings tab, click add a promo code, enter the promo code LO Thunder, that's LO, like locked on, and SeatGeek is going to send you $20 after you've made your first ticket purchase. Download the SeatGeek app and enter the promo code LO Thunder today.
You are Locked On Thunder, your daily Oklahoma City Thunder podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
I do want to talk about your point on Oladipo, though, because I think it's interesting. His assist rate is way down. Free throw rate, way down. Even compared to, I don't know if you saw, I don't know if you're sitting around like waiting for me to tweet out my articles, but but like last week or maybe the week before, I did a comparison on Oladipo. Not his free throw rate, but his free throws per possession used.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at the free throws per possession used, it's amazing. If you look at the other people in the same league leader range as him, like he's getting, as of the time I wrote that article last week, he was getting to the line on 6% of his possessions. And that was in line so he was at exactly like 6 or 6.1%. And everyone mm-hmm. else was within 0.2 of a possession of him, was like 5.9, 6, 6.1, maybe 6.2. The other guys were like Klay Thompson, Trevor Ariza, Jared Dudley, Eric Gordon.
Mm-hmm.
And like these are guys who are all like exclusively catch and shoot guys.
Just spot up guys. Mm-hmm.
And the problem to me is not necessarily that Oladipo is not getting to the line. Like that is a problem, but I think it's a little bit too simple. The problem to me is that like Trevor Ariza, 2/3 of his shots come from three.
Yeah.
Klay Thompson, almost half his shots come from three. Eric Gordon, more than 2/3 of his shots come from three. Who is the other guy who I said? Jared Dudley.
Dudley.
Yeah, like 60% or 58% or whatever of his shots come from three. And Oladipo, only 37, 38, something like that, percent of his shots come from three. And that's,
I'd like to also know the number of dribbles that all those guys have had this season compared to Oladipo.
Yeah, but it's way fewer. Way fewer. And, like, that's 37, 38% is a fine number. It's whatever his three-point rate is right now, it's his career high. And he's shooting a great percentage, and he's shooting a great percentage on efficient shots. Like, he's shooting great from the corner, and he's shooting great on catch and shoot. And he's been awesome since he came back from the back spasms, where he's shooting a ridiculous percentage from three. But the fact that his three-point percentage or three-point rate is not in line with those guys, and yet he's still getting to the free-throw line at such a low number, like he was never good at getting to the free-throw line. But like I do think that should be developmentally concerning for them to some degree. Like I don't think it means that like he's a good player, don't get me wrong, but just in terms of improvement from an efficiency standpoint – like, he's probably not going to get much more efficient as a jump shooter because he's been a really good jump shooter. And if he gets more efficient, like, he would have to become one of the best jump shooters in the NBA in order to do it because he's shooting a really good percentage from mid-range, shooting a really good percentage from three. Like, he'd have to turn into a great, 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 elite, top-tier, like, three-point contest level, you know, three-point shooter, which I guess is possible, but, like, It's just that's an unrealistic and probably unfair expectation to put on any player. Like you have to be an all-star caliber shooter in order to do it. That's not fair. So he would have to start getting the line more. And we've actually seen a decrease in his ability to get to the line. And I don't know how disconcerting that is for the Thunder, but I could see it being that.
I wonder if it's Vic or wonder if it's the role that the Thunder are giving him.
It definitely has to do with the role.
Yeah.
Like it's Orlando, chicken or egg thing too, right? Yeah. Like mm-hmm. is he a product of the role, or is the role a product of the Thunder thinking, well, this is what's best for him?
Yeah, I don't know, because he was pretty darn good the second half of the year with the Magic last year, where he was basically their sixth man that handled the ball. And he was really effective for them. Obviously they weren't winning. So how effective was he? I don't know, but his numbers sure were good. So I don't know. I just see this year as such a development year in so many ways for the Thunder, and I think that Vic he's been very good. I don't want to complain about him, but I just feel like maybe they've missed some development from him in certain areas where, you know, there was some thought that maybe this guy could be a fringe all-star, but right now he's Kent Bazemore or he is, you know, Trevor Ariza, which is great. Like you need those guys. But he's been more than that in the past. So you just want to see more. You want to see that.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like I actually think he's been quite good this year. I think he's had a legitimately good year. Like he's having a great shooting year. He has been a really good shooter. And, mm-hmm. and aside from that slump he had after he hurt his wrist, Yep. He's been shooting the heck out. Like, if you take out that time, so he says that his wrist really healed when he was out with the back spasms because he stopped using his wrist. And if you look at the timeline of when he had a shooting slump, it perfectly coincides with that. So it makes all the sense in the world to believe him. So if you take out that time, like if you assume like there's healthy wrist time and there's injured wrist time, if you take out injured wrist time, that time between when he came back from the wrist injury but wasn't 100% and before he went out with the back spasms, he's shooting well over 40% from three. Like 43% or something.
It's really crazy.
Yeah. And I mean, shooting a great percentage. I don't know if that means he's a 43% three-point shooter, but he's still almost approaching 40% right now anyway on the season in full. So he's been really good. I think he's a really solid on-ball defender. And I think he's really good. He like I was saying about Samaje, will sometimes – Samaje, that's a new pronunciation. Samaje. Like I was saying about him, sometimes he'll get, you know, backdoor and that kind of stuff. But I actually think he's pretty good chasing guys off screens and, like, navigating pin downs and that kind of stuff. And he definitely – there's no effort issue with him defensively. He's always playing hard. So I think he's been a good defensive player. And, like, he's at worst been a good 3-and-D guy who can do more than just three when given the opportunity. It's just the free throw stuff seems like it's something that he could conceivably improve on. You know, like it seems like an improvable trait. And my argument is not that he won't improve. He's still 24 years old. It's just an interesting thing to follow because I feel like that's the easiest way for him to make a jump from like, all right, now he's like a slightly above average efficiency 16-point scorer to him being like a very efficient 18 to 20-point guy. And like a legitimate second option. And that's something where I wonder if that's the easiest route for him to get there. Because if he's able to do that, it would be really interesting to see what type of player he can become because he's obviously talented.
Yeah, he is. And I guess my only issue is that you look at those other guys that you compared him to, like the Warriors don't need Klay Thompson to dribble the ball. They don't need him to drive. The way he can be most effective is sit on their hitting threes. Trevor Ariza, he just hasn't been able – he didn't have a tight enough handle to be that guy. And also now that they have this Mike D'Antoni offense, kind of the same story. Jared Dudley was like a power forward that developed into a wing out of necessity. But Victor Oladipo was supposed to be a guy that could handle the ball. He's supposed to be a guy that can run a pick and roll. And he does have a good – he can handle the ball very well. So that's – I just – you just want more, and especially with this team. Like, if this was the version of Oladipo that the Thunder got and they kept Kevin Durant and they brought in Al Horford, I mean, it's perfect. I couldn't imagine a better player to be that two guard or to be a part of that final five than him.
I think Michael Jordan would be better.
He wasn't as good a spot-up shooter as Vic is, so I don't know, Fred. but, I mean, it's just he would have been perfect. But now, like, with this team – it's like, well, I mean, we just need more from everybody. And, you know, Vic has filled his role very well. And if this is what they're asking him to do, I'm not sure he could have done better. I don't know. I just keep saying he leaves us wanting more. And that's I just feel like this summer is going to be particularly important for him developing and then all the other young guys. I don't think the Thunder are going to get a major free agent. I'd be surprised if they made a major trade. Development for this team is going to be massive this summer for them to be better than they are today.
We've been a little critical today. They're on a two-game winning streak, although they're not playing well. I feel like Russell. I feel like the Thunder are on a three-game losing streak, and Russell Westbrook's on a two-game winning streak.
Oh yeah, I mean they were miserable.
Yeah, they were really bad in the Orlando game. That was a poor performance. But give me a non-Russell Westbrook positive from the last couple of weeks.
From the last couple of weeks. Let's see. Jeremy Grant, man. Like I think that he needs to play more. I think that he's opened himself up a role for this team to be that small ball four. I think that Pinky makes a ton of sense next to really any of the centers. Even Taj Gibson, who I think has been playing really well. I think he fits really well with this team in a lot of different ways. But I think Jeremy Grant, who seemed to have really fallen out of the rotation after the trade, is carving out a role, and you can see the effect that he's having on the team when he's out there because he's so versatile. And I don't know. I mean, he didn't take a shot against the Magic, but he was just really effective. He was moving the ball. I think that he's carving himself out a role, and his contract situation this summer will be really interesting because they can make him a restricted free agent if they want to. And I have no clue what he would get on the open market, but he's been good, and I expect kind of big things from him, just as far as filling a role and being able to play defense and really not screw up where they have all these other, like Sabonis. I'm a huge believer in him. I think he's going to be a very good player, but right now I think Jeremy Grant can fill that role today, where Sabonis, it may be next year or down the road where he's going to be able to fill that role effectively.
So I have the we're recording this on Thursday night at around 9:50 Central Time right now. I have, is there any chance you have the Portland-Houston game on in the background?
I don't. I don't even know if I want to tell you what I'm doing right now out in my garage. I'm refinishing a chair as we talk about the Thunder.
That sounds lovely.
It's quite lovely.
It sounds relaxing. It sounds therapeutic.
It actually kind of is.
So I just wanted to point out that after I think I just witnessed in the Portland game the single most impractical arguing with an official I've ever seen in an NBA game.
What happened?
Harden, like, shot a floater.
Yeah.
And Nurkic went to block the shot. It was like one of those, like, maybe it was a floater, maybe it was a maybe it was a lob plays. And mm-hmm. Nurkic blocked the shot, and they called it a goaltend. But after he hit the shot up, the ball went in the basket. Like, it went through the hoop. And then Nurkic and Lillard both ran over the ref and was like, it wasn't a goaltend. But who cares? The ball went in anyway.
But it went in if it wasn't.
So are you, like, really trying to, like, pad your non-goaltending stats? Is that what the argument was? It was just the most impractical arguing of a call I've ever seen.
I love that. Nurkic is so good, man.
He is really good.
It's been really surprising. I have a friend who's a Nuggets fan. We talk about the Nuggets all the time. I think they're a fascinating franchise. But it's been sad times. That Nurkic game the other night against the Nuggets, I mean, he was just a beast. And that's another thing that, like, shows you that, like, psychologically and, like, the human element is such a huge part of this. Because Nurkic looked awful in Denver, and that's why they had to give away a first-round pick. But clearly, when there are not enough minutes to go around and you have talent, that can be a problem. And Nurkic is, like, a huge, like, red flag of that. Like, don't just stockpile all these guys because eventually – you might come across some guy who's really good, but will be very unhappy that he doesn't get to play.
Yeah, what a trade for Portland there. Speaking of trades, how's this for a segue?
This is a great segue.
So ESPN released they have ESPN Rank and they have ESPN Forecast, and ESPN Forecast, the panel that votes on ESPN Forecast, just a ton of different people, bloggers and TV personalities and writers and just tons of people associated with ESPN, they all vote on this, and they voted on the 2017 NBA Management Ranking. So, like, just really ranking the best front offices. The Thunder came in ranked 10th, and I wanted to – I know you had thoughts on this, and I figured we'd discuss. I'm just going to read off the top 10 because I'm not going to expect the average person to have this one memorized. So I'm just going to read it off. So number one is give me a one-sentence reaction to each team that I read off. It can be as short as one word and as long as one sentence. Number one is the Spurs.
Duh.
Number two is the Warriors.
Hate this.
Number three is the Celtics.
I guess they're that good. I don't think they're that good, but whatever.
Number four is Houston.
Completely overrated. That's a hack job.
Actually?
Yes.
Give me more, because I don't agree with you.
I just compared to, like, the success that the Thunder have had, like, I just don't see it. Like, what are we judging? What is the criteria that we're judging them on? Because they've been to the Western Conference Finals once with this regime, or Sam Presti's been five times. So, like, what's the criteria? Like, are we just, like, how much people like the GM? Like, I don't know. Like, what is it?
Okay, well, that's fair, but hack job is a little harsh.
At three, I just think it's pretty. Yeah, maybe that was. That was Span Andrew. Sorry.
That was a little extreme. That was the that was like the argument for like, oh, you're putting Russ second for MVP. Why do you think he had a terrible season? It's like, no, you're putting him second for MVP. You're saying he's literally had the second best season of the 400, 500 guys who have been in the NBA this season. You're saying he's number two. Incredible. Number two in the world. The second best basketball season in the entire world. Why do you think he was terrible?
That's not good enough,
that's
Fred.
That's what you just did. They should be 8-4. Hatcha.
I'm sorry. That was you're asking for instant reaction, and that's just
yes.
That's just,
no, I
that's
love
just
it.
Me.
That's exactly why I asked for instant reaction. That's why I went in. Okay, number five. Number five is Miami.
I can see that. Yes.
Yeah, Miami's great. I actually, if I were going personally, I'd have Miami third.
Yeah. What has Houston done that's been better than what Miami has done? I don't know. Like I'd really like to know the answer to that.
Yeah. I think it probably has something to do with it. You know, Daryl Morey. I personally like Daryl Morey.
I mean, he's very likable. I mean,
he's really. But I think he's like. I don't mean personally. I mean, as a GM, I think he's a very good GM.
He's good.
He's very smart. And,
yes.
And
well, I don't.
They're
I don't
always
disagree.
Competitive. They're always good.
Yeah, I don't disagree. My question is that they haven't had the same level of success.
Miami just from a. Like Miami has as look, the Spurs are on their own tier, but Miami has to me as healthy of a culture as any organization in the league.
Oh yeah, I mean to do what they've done this season has been spectacular. To take basically, I mean two completely different teams and win championships. There's just not a lot of teams that can do that. And under, I mean, I guess and Shaq was really the leader of that team. It wasn't really Wade. Back then, although Wade was the best player, to take a team under new leadership like that, I mean, that's pretty spectacular.
Yeah, number six is Cleveland.
Okay, I mean, that's just the LeBron award.
Right. It's really impressive that LeBron could be the best player and the sixth best GM. That's, like, really impressive.
Yeah, it is.
Number seven is Dallas. I thought that was weird, to be honest.
They won one title in a lucky year, and you know they put teams around Dirk. I mean, I don't know. That's
to me,
kind of ridiculous.
To me, the most impressive thing about them too, similar to Miami, the most. I mean, they're not the same level as Miami to me, but they have an impressive organizational culture.
Yeah, and their coach is ridiculous.
Right, but this does not really factor in the coach though. This is GM president.
Right,
which
I don't see it because I mean, what have they've been trying to build through free agency for like the last 5 years, and they've struck out on almost every guy that they've actually wanted. They've had to go to their B list every single year, and I don't understand how you could put them above the Thunder. I don't think that makes any sense.
Okay, I'm combining 8, 9, 10 into one. 8 is Toronto, 9 is Utah, 10 is the Thunder. I'll give you more than one sentence on this one.
It's ridiculous. It's absolutely absurd. The Thunder, I don't know what they're like ESPN, like some people like punish the Thunder for. They made a bad trade with the James Harden deal. It wasn't a good trade. Yes, we know that. Kevin Durant left, but was that Sam Presti's doing? Was that the front office's doing? Probably not. But they still have Russell Westbrook on the team. Like I just don't get it. They went to the Western Conference Finals. They've been to the NBA Finals. He's drafted well. He's still fleecing teams on the trade market. I don't know what the Thunder have to do to get like the respect that they deserve. I guess
I don't really understand why Dallas is ahead of them. That's kind of the one where I'm most puzzled. Like Utah doesn't have sustained. Utah, the thing is. Utah doesn't have sustained success, and I feel like sustained success has to be part of the conversation. Right. You know, like that should be a requirement. But like I'm willing to believe that different people have different criteria, and like Utah has put together a wonderful team through the draft and through trades. Like
sure.
The way that they've acquired and then developed Derek Favors is great, and Gobert was fantastic pick, And Rodney Hood was a fantastic pick. And the George Hill trade was a fantastic trade. And how the way that they've drafted and developed Gordon Hayward is great. Like, they're really good. You know, like that. I understand why if somebody has different priorities in evaluating this stuff, they would do it. They could put Utah ahead of them, you know, and Utah is the better team this year. So maybe if you're thinking, well, this is not a better, maybe if the logic is, well, this is the best, you know, the best positioning that a front office put their team in this year, not over the last 10 years, then Utah's in the better position right now. Like I wouldn't necessarily agree, but I would think that was intelligent logic, and I think a reasonable human being could make that argument, and it would be fine. Dallas, like, has spent years trading away picks, missing on a lot of draft picks. They've kind of meandered around the bottom of the playoff race for the last few years. A lot of that just making it that high up just because, you know, Rick Carlisle is that good of a coach.
Yeah, I don't see that at all. And even Utah, like, tell me this. If Gordon Hayward leaves this summer, will they be, like, the 17th ranked front office out of his, like, personal decision to leave, which really isn't, like, a front office move for him to leave them, right? Like, if Gordon Hayward's like, well, I would really like to play for Brad Stevens, and the Celtics are, you know, they made the Western Conference Finals or the Eastern Conference Finals, and I'd like to be part of that team, and, you know, the Jazz lost in the first or second round. I just would rather not do this. Does that mean that they're any worse? I don't think that it makes them any worse. I just think that Gordon Hayward made a decision to leave. I don't know. I just find it pretty ridiculous.
Yeah, no, that's, I agree. I'm with you. I think that makes sense. I think there's a lot of this is just kind of personal stuff too. Like, here's the thing. Unless you're around a front office every day, unless you're really on the inside, most of the stuff that a front office does is, like, it's really hard to differentiate. Like, you can tell that the Spurs are great, and you can tell that the Warriors are great, and that is easy to do. But once you start getting to the middle of the pack, it is really, really hard if you're on the outside to say, all right, who's better in the front office, Milwaukee or Denver?
Yeah.
That's really hard. It's like they both have really good young pieces. They're both kind of building the same way. It's like, well, one got, you know, lucky that Giannis was at 15 and they made a smart pick and picked him. But, you know, there's also some amount of luck in that pick too, which people don't always talk about, like that a guy fell to them and there's a lot of intelligence too. But it's like that Branch Rickey quote, luck is the residue of design. Like, there's luck in there as well. It's like, well, they're lucky, so they're going to be higher up. Like, you know, it's just, it's really near impossible to have an outright answer to who's a better front office, Minnesota or Atlanta. It's just, you know, is Minnesota better because they have a bunch of number one overall picks? I don't know.
I guess I would just like to know some of the criteria that they were choosing to, I mean, I don't know. I mean, the Thunder have just had so much success and they're again going to be in the playoffs, even though that their franchise has been drastically changed. But the culture's still there and Russell Westbrook has been incredible, who was picked by Sam Presti. I don't know. I frankly just did not understand it when I looked at that list. I don't know. It seemed incredibly biased in some areas and just didn't make sense for the Thunder to me.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'll tell you what, if you took a poll of executives around the league, like when they do the annual GM survey, if you took a poll, I don't think the Thunder would be 10. I think the Thunder as an organization are more respected within the league than they are outside of it.
Why do you think that is?
It might have something to do with Bill Simmons.
Yeah.
Like, I'm actually not kidding.
I know you're not.
I think Bill Simmons controls a lot of, like, Bill Simmons was my favorite writer of all time growing up. Like,
oh yeah, me too. But I loved him. Yeah.
Yeah. Like no joke. Bill Simmons is, he's not the reason that I'm a sports writer, because there's not one singular reason that I'm a sports writer. Bill Simmons is a huge reason why I am a sports writer. Like an sure. absolutely massive reason why. So this is not a criticism of Bill Simmons. It's Bill Simmons is so big and he's so famous and he's so influential to the fan and even to a lot of people in the media, especially people around our generation, mm-hmm. especially, you know, people who were bloggers and that kind of stuff, because that's how he came up. He was yep. like, he basically invented basketball blogging as we know it. Mm-hmm. Like he created that. And so I think he has major influence. And when Simmons is still, you know, 5 years later harping on the Harden trade, mm-hmm. I think that's kind of what has kept it. I really do think Bill Simmons is why it's been in the public sentiment. And I'm not even necessarily saying he's wrong. I just think it's, I just think it's the reason why. And I don't think people from front offices are necessarily reading, are as influenced by media members as media members are or as fans are. Mm-hmm. I think they're more influenced by each other. And, you know, when you talk to people in front offices and you ask them, you know, who do you think is the best? Sam Presti's name usually is in the conversation. He's usually someone who's really respected. There are people who don't feel that way too. But I think for the most part, just when you ask that question of people seem to really respect him and hold him in a high esteem to the top. I mean, there's some organizations that really don't even want to trade with him because they feel like they're just going to get fleeced and they don't want to do it. He's like that random guy in your fantasy league that you're like, screw it, I'm not trading with John anymore. It's just not happening. So like, I think when you get to that point, I'm sure Sam Presti would rather be respected by front office people than people on ESPN forecast. But
sure.
I honestly do. Is that a crazy theory? I honestly do think Bill Simmons has a decent amount to do with it.
No, I think that he has a lot to do with it. I loved Bill Simmons until he completely like went anti-Thunder. And then I hung on for a few years, but I can proudly say that I have recovered from listening to Bill Simmons. I don't listen to him anymore, and I'm happier for it.
See, I have no bias for or against the Thunder. I just report.
I know.
There. So
if I didn't, I still would. But
I look at it as I've never been a Thunder fan. I was a Clippers fan growing up.
Yeah.
So he's
always killed the Clippers.
Yeah, but like the Clippers deserve to be killed. Like,
sure.
I can't remember an instance of reading something you read about the Clippers and being like, that's not fair. So I used to kill the Clippers and I grew up a Clippers fan and I still listen to Simmons' podcasts all the time. Mm-hmm. I actually really enjoyed his podcast with Klosterman the other day. I thought their MVP conversation was a good one. I actually enjoyed that.
Yeah, but I think the Harden trade can be a really bad trade, and also Sam Presti can still be a really good GM.
I agree. The Harden trade was undoubtedly a bad trade.
Yeah.
Of course it was a bad trade.
And they've gotten some good pieces from it, sure. But if Jeremy Lamb was like as good as Alan Crabb, then I think that the trade would have looked a lot better. But because Jeremy Lamb is really just not a very good NBA player, the trade is pretty awful.
Right. Well, here's the thing. People aren't very nuanced. Shocking, I know. And either the Harden trade was a bad trade and thus Presti is a bad GM.
Mm-hmm.
Or the Harden trade was totally necessary because Harden wanted out. Mm-hmm. And you know, it was never going to work with those three guys because they all wanted the ball and, you know, the money wasn't going to work and the ownership wouldn't allow for it and yada, yada, yada. Or it could be that Harden wanted his own team and, you know, wanted a max contract.
Mm-hmm.
And Presti didn't necessarily handle it the best way. And it wasn't a good trade. And Presti's still a good GM. All of those things can still be true at the same time.
Yeah.
They can all still be true at the same time.
Mm-hmm. You know, that last one was right, by the way.
Yeah. I think he's a really good general manager.
Yeah, he is.
Even look at some of the moves he's made now. I mean, man, talk to people. It was not just random Thunder fans after that Bulls trade being like, man, what a trade. Like, people around the league were like, he fleeced Chicago.
Yep.
And I mean, people around the league were like, how did he just do that? And it's not just the trades. Like, it's not. It's the culture within the organization, the fact that, You look at all the other executives that have come from this organization around the league that have come from the Thunder. You look at the ability they've had to even keep guys in Oklahoma City, which is kind of amazing, which is not something that I don't think anybody necessarily expected to happen with a franchise in Oklahoma City. They're never going to sign free agents. It's never going to happen.
They're not.
It's never going to happen. But the fact that they've been able to keep guys that players talk about it as being a real players organization, like that's a big thing, like being able to create something like that. And part of it is because they don't want to, they protect players from people like me all the time, but
that's
fine. What do you got to plug before we go?
Just listen to the Down to Dunk podcast. We're going to record a podcast tomorrow morning. It will be heavy on the Russell Westbrook is the MVP. So if you want to hear a very statistically biased version of why Russell Westbrook's the MVP, listen, tomorrow morning should be up around 10 a.m. Just search Down to Dunk on iTunes, and you can find us on dailythunder.com.
And give the Twitter stuff too.
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at Andrew K. Schlecht, S-C-H-L-E-C-H-T. And then you can find the Down to Dunk Twitter handle is DTD Podcast.
Anyone ever told you your last name sounds like it should be a curse word?
Well, it means bad in German, so it kind of is.
I believe that. It sounds like it would mean bad in German. It sounds very negative.
Yes, it is.
You can remember I'm on every weekday, Monday through Friday, iTunes, to subscribe, questions, comments, Gmail is lockedonthunder@gmail.com. And you can find me on Twitter at Fred Katz, FredKatz. Log on to normantranscript.com for all your Thunder needs. Check out Thunder Road. That's my blog there. And you can see what's next for the Thunder. It's under the sports tab on the site. That's going to do it for today. Off for the weekend. Spurs on Friday night. Back on Monday. Andrew, thanks for coming.
Yeah, thank you.
Until Monday, Locked on Thunder is locking up.